Hello and welcome to the Four Press Podcast presented by GolfWeek.com. I'm your host, David Dusak, and this week my guest is Golf Week and USA Today senior writer Steve DiMeglio. In the podcast you're about to hear, Steve and I discuss comments made by Rory McIlroy, who said in an interview that the majority of the players want to push back the 2020 Ryder Cup to 2021 because they don't want to play if there won't be spectators at Whistling Straits. We also talked about the PGA Tour getting ready to start in 2 weeks and what is concerning the players most about the events in Fort Worth and Hilton Head, Hartford, and Detroit. And finally, Steve and I talk about who would be the best athletes and celebrities to join Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson in the Match 3. Get stronger, hit longer, and end pain with Golf Forever. Created by Justin Leonard and co-author of the Younger Next Year Back book, Dr. Jeremy James, Golf Forever is the Take Anywhere online golf fitness program that helps you build a body primed for golf. It's simple, safe, and it works. At home, in the gym, on the golf course, Golf Forever's easy-to-follow exercises, warm-up routines, and course management videos will help you play your best pain-free. Sign up today at golfforever.com and use promo code GOLFWEEK for a free 14-day trial. And now joining me on the aforementioned Four Press Podcast is Golf Week and USA Today senior writer Steve DiMeglio. Steve, how you doing, buddy?
Taking it one day at a time down here in rainy Florida. That rain that fell on the Match 2 on Sunday has moved up to the northern east part of Florida, and going hour by hour, day by day.
Lovely. Well, I can tell you that up here in the northeast, it's finally spring. And I had a chance to play golf for the first time last Friday, which was great. I got out, walked 18, hit some terrible shots. I mean, god-awful stuff. Hit a couple good ones, couple good bunker shots, which for me is sort of a rarity. I don't usually visit the sand too much. I don't enjoy my trips there. But I got into two greenside bunkers and hit two good bunker shots and got two sandies. So that was actually felt kind of good. It's funny, I'd missed the preparation, like knowing the night before that you're going to play golf the next day. It was something that occurred to me as I was putting my bag together. I was like, oh, I'm playing golf tomorrow. And a little, maybe an underappreciated sort of feeling that got me kind of jazzed up. So are people in your area playing just as much? Have you noticed a little increase or an uptick in the number of people that are playing? Or have things, for the most part, in your area in Florida remained fairly level and consistent?
Pretty level and consistent. I mean, I've golfed twice, and I've been over to TPC Sawgrass, home to the Players Championship, a few times to interview some players. Obviously, it's not at the same level as it used to be, but, you know, the other two places I went and played golf, they were busy. We were going off every 12 minutes. And we did have to wait a couple of times on tees, but that was very rare. But golf carts still are the name of the game down here. Of course, there are some courses you can walk, but, you know, the majority of places that are open up here in the Northeast, you're in a golf cart. Because, one, you know, the age group is a little up there, you know, with the senior citizens. And, two, the courses were built that I've been to basically for real estate, and it would take – it'd be a long time to walk it. So, but yeah, there people are getting out. I went to the back of the range looking for Billy Horschel. I don't know. I think three days ago. And there were like 12 professional golfers back there, working. So, including Jim Furyk. And, it looked like a normal day back there on the back of the range at TPC Sawgrass. And
I thought it was funny over the last couple of days, Horschel's been, he just finished on Monday driving from his place in Florida up to Aspen, Colorado. He was documenting that on Instagram and getting all into the drive. I think he woke up Sunday morning. It looked like maybe around 5 o'clock or 5:30 and drove to, I believe, Kansas City, and then woke up really early on Memorial Day Monday and arrived what appeared to be late afternoon, early evening up in Colorado. And I guess that's where he and his family will be spending the summer. They've done that a few times. But it's funny. It sort of reminded me that, like, yeah, these guys have families and stuff too. And Horschel's made his money. There's no question about it. He won a FedEx Cup. He's a PGA Tour winner. And here he is driving solo, you know, in the SUV, literally cross country. How'd you spend your Memorial Day? Driving solo from Florida to Colorado. Good times. Good times.
Yeah, he thought it would take him 28 hours. I don't know what it was door to door, but it was north of 25 hours. So,
yeah.
Yeah, it's a long drive.
In a little bit of golf news, a couple things we can sort of talk about is we're about 2 weeks out now from the PGA Tour getting going. But for today, and we're recording this on Tuesday morning, Rory McIlroy's got a story. We've got a story, I should say, about Rory McIlroy in the Ryder Cup up on golfweek.com right now, where in an interview that he did with the BBC, he came out and basically said that my hunch is that I don't see it's going to happen, it being the Ryder Cup. So I don't think it's going to happen. I think the majority of the players would like to see it pushed back to 2021 so they can get to play in front of crowds and have the atmosphere that makes the Ryder Cup so special. The players are the ones that make the Ryder Cup. If they're not on board with it, it won't happen. Or excuse me, if they're not on board with it and don't want to play, then there is no Ryder Cup. Do you think that McIlroy's opinion about the players not wanting to play if there are no spectators is pretty accurate? I mean, do you buy what he's saying, that most of the guys would rather push it to 21 if there can't be fans?
Well, I think in a perfect world they would do that. But again, we don't live in a perfect world anymore. But I've talked to a couple of players. None of them are Rory. And they're basically on the side of Rory. I would imagine that Patrick Harrington and Steve Stricker has talked to everybody, mm-hmm. Every player that could potentially be there. And it's funny, and it's not funny. About a week ago or 10 days ago, I thought, you know what? The first event that could have fans back could be the Ryder Cup, because the state of Wisconsin lifted its shelter at home. The Supreme Court of the state of Wisconsin lifted up their shelter at home restrictions. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, all the bars, restaurants were packed that night, you know, within hours after they released their ruling. And so if that's the case, you could have fans there. Obviously, there would be very few European fans, and I don't think there would be 40,000 fans there. But again, they could have fans there. But Patrick Harrington said this about, what now, a month and a half ago, that, hey, we might have to take a hit for the team, you know, and that there are financial implications to deal with here. The European Tour, you know, the European Tour canceled one of its moneymakers. You know, they canceled till next year, postponed till next year. They canceled the 2020 Open Championship. And I don't know what their piece of the pie would be from this year's Ryder Cup, but I can't believe they'd be getting zero. And that has to be played into this. But if you don't have players on board, and honestly, you're putting them in a really tight spot, because let's say they say, sorry, we are going ahead with this. We're going to have the Ryder Cup in 2021 at Whistling Straits in Wisconsin. And we're going to have it without fans. Now, which player is going to say, well, I'm not playing. I'm not going to play. And that puts them in a really, really bad spot. And so there better be, and I would imagine there are meetings right now behind closed doors. As we get closer, and again, they can't wait much longer. If the PGA Tour season does start in 16 days or 15 days, and there are no interruptions after that, you're going to be able to have some type of form to look at for the teams to figure out a way to fill out, the captains to figure out a way to fill out their teams. And that has to happen first. Because look, if Colonial doesn't start, or the PGA Tour season is delayed another month, or it's stopped for another month, then I can't see how they could go forward without form or fans. So, does Rory's voice matter? Oh, yes.
Absolutely. Yep.
And I think other players are going to chime in here and there, but I think every one of them should be told, hey guys, we're working on this. Let's give us some time, a little more time, to figure out which direction we're going to go, and then we can all chime in if you want.
I think there's a couple of really important points that fans may not be aware of that you brought up, Steve, and I think it was great that you did. Number one, we as media and fans and people listening to this podcast selfishly want to see the Ryder Cup. We want to see golf. We've been denied sport for the most part for the last almost 3 months. And the Ryder Cup, this year was set up to be so great. I mean, you and I have talked about this before. Between the four major championships, adding the Olympics in August, the Ryder Cup in September, it was set up to be a fantastic year for golf. Tiger Woods defending at the Masters, it was all going to be great. And a lot of that has been taken away from us. So the idea of postponing the Ryder Cup for an additional year so we can play it with fans, to some people would be like, well, no, if we can safely have, you know, the match, which we just had with Tiger and with Phil and the quarterbacks and stuff like that, Brady and Manning, and we can do this thing, the event that we had the week before at Seminole, then in a few months, why can't we get 24 players and, you know, associate, you know, captains and stuff like that, get 40 or 50 people up at Whistling Straits and play this out, even if we can't have spectators. But the point that you bring up is that the European Tour depends on certain things for revenue, for its survival. You know, they don't have quite as much sponsorship money coming in as the USPGA Tour. And if there are no tickets being sold, if a lot of the corporate stuff isn't happening, if there are refunds that have to be given out, then that's bad for the European Tour, you know? And I've been to several Ryder Cups. I know you've been to a bunch. My first Ryder Cup was at the K Club in 2006, if memory serves right. And it was not a great time for the American team there. But the passion that you immediately see, the atmosphere that's created, it was replicated again at Valhalla in 2008. I didn't go to the 1-10 in Wales, but then I was at Medina, unfortunately for the U.S. team. You know, when they gave that one up, other ones as well. It's the event, to Rory's point, in a lot of ways, is made by the spectators. The matches can be great, but the spectators, it's a big deal. I'm really torn. You know, I'm sort of dancing around all sides of this issue, Steve, but I think there's so much more to it than just, can we bring in a few months the people together in order to hold the matches? I think that we probably could. As you said, Wisconsin's already opening up, you know, a little bit more on the aggressive side than some of the states. Here in Connecticut, we're going very slowly. New York is going to go slowly. It sounds like California is going to go slowly. Wisconsin's going to go more. Okay, it's up to them. But it's there's so many more things than just balancing out, could you hold the competition? And I think it's really easy for a lot of people not to realize that it's the Ryder Cup is more than just the culmination of the matches, isn't it? There's a lot of stuff that goes into this and that needs to go into this.
Oh, and I don't want to be Debbie Downer here or not, but there is no guarantee that 2021 would have tons of fans either. If you postpone this for a year, there's no guarantee that you're going to have your 40, 50,000 people there. There's no way we're going to do that until we get a vaccine or we get some of the greatest treatment that they have yet to get
on. I agree.
So if that happens, and okay, I'll be the Debbie Downer, and there won't be fans allowed in 2021, or they're only going to allow, let's say, 2,000 fans.
Now, a certain number of fans per hole, whatever it's going to be. I'm right there with you. I agree.
So
I 100% agree.
I have to think they've got to put a lot of thought into this. It's just not, hey, you know, we're not going to play because there's no fans. Well, there's more into it than that. But so we'll see. I mean, again, what are we, June, July, 4 months away, about a little less than 4 months away from the Ryder Cup. Look, I'm just counting down the days right now until the starting line at Colonial, because we haven't gotten there yet. We haven't gotten
and
let's get to that.
Let's talk about that because you and I were both on the call with the PGA Tour a couple weeks ago when they outlined the plan for testing, the creation of basically the bubble around essential personnel and the players and the caddies, the desire to keep them pretty much away from just about everybody. Certainly anybody who's not been tested and sort of vetted, if you will, for safety reasons, and all that's good. From a player standpoint, I haven't heard many players take to social media or do interviews and basically say, I think this is the wrong decision, this is bad, and I'm against the restart at the Charles Schwab Challenge. What are you sort of sensing? You've talking to players if you're hanging out at the back at Sawgrass. I mean, it seems like guys are starting to get ready and that this is going to happen. Is that the feeling you've got that we're, you know, unless something really drastic changes here, and that's certainly possible, we're going to have golf in about 2.5 weeks, aren't we?
Well, it looks like that. But again, going forward, there is apprehension. Pat Perez has talked with ESPN about his apprehension, but he's going to go play. His intention is to go play. I've talked to other players. Their apprehension is basically testing positive in a foreign state, in another mm-hmm. state, and then having to quarantine. And is it really safe flying through a plane? A lot of these guys haven't been on a plane in a long time. And then there's the other thing. Okay, we get there. Is there a number that if of the four, let's say 400 people, I think it's going to be around 400 people have to take the COVID-19 test before on the Monday as they arrive, before and on the Monday when they arrive in Fort Worth. Is there a number that would say, okay, we can't play if a number of people that test positive? And is that number 10? Is that 20? You know, 5% of 400 is 20 people. And if 20 people test positive, and let's say 8 of them are players, and they have to quarantine, what are we going to do from there? So their apprehension deals with the travel and deals with the testing. Now, they want to do the testing. Okay, I take that back. Their apprehension is the travel and mm-hmm. the possibility of quarantining away from their families. So they are less apprehensive about getting inside the ropes. They can social distance playing the game of golf. If you have go out in threesomes, that's 6 people inside the ropes. There's going to be walking score, that's 7. There might be someone designated that will handle all of the pin and the rakes, mm-hmm. And that would be at each hole, so that'd be 1 per hole. So there's 6, 7, scoring 8.
Well, I mean, it'd be really easy for them to have fewer than a dozen people on a hole that's between, 200 and 550 yards long. Right. You can social distance and be safe out there.
And they might have to warm up differently. They might have to warm up without gym. And they might have to dress in the parking lot because there will be limitations on how many people can be in the locker room at one time. And they're all looking into that. They want to play. There's no doubt they're itching to play. And there's no doubt that their minds will be consumed with not only their yardage book and their form and their swing, but it will be consumed by getting to and from the golf course, getting to and from the rental courtesy car, then getting to and from each tournament. It's an extra layer of things that people are going to have to think about. The players are going to have to be thinking about. So right now they're ready to go. They said there'll be enough tests there without taking away from the local communities, tests that they would need. And, Justin Thomas, I talked to him before the match, and he said, look, we're all on board with knowing that there's no way the PGA Tour would go forward with this unless they are 100% confident that they can do everything in their power to limit the risk. You can't make it 100% risk-free. You can't. I mean, if that were the case, nobody would be going to grocery stores right now.
Yeah.
You know, you can't guarantee 100% safety. Employers know that. So, but they also know they've got to start work. They believe it's time to get back as safely as possible. And so hopefully they will reach that starting line in Fort Worth at Colonial, and hopefully they'll reach the finish line at Colonial and go from there.
Has the playing of the TaylorMade driving relief match that we saw at Seminole, and now the playing of the Tiger and Mickelson match at the Medalist last weekend, shown or given guys a little bit more encouragement, do you think, that to play or to that it can be safe? It sounds like enough of the guys who would be at Colonial or Hilton Head or coming up here to Hartford, etc., the guys are playing. People are hitting balls. People are starting to knock the rust off, and they're getting ready for preparations. Has seeing golf on television, from your guesstimation or anybody that you've talked to, shown to them that you can do this and that you can be safe? Or, as you had sort of alluded to, is really just the apprehension that they have, when I'm outside the ropes, am I putting myself at greater risk than if I just hang out for another 3, 4, 5 weeks here at home?
No, it's comparing small apples to very large oranges. Let's see. None of the players had to fly to the TaylorMade match.
Right.
The only person that flew in for the match, Capital One's match, was Phil. We're talking a footprint of about 40 people.
Versus fields of 120 or 156 or whatever it's going to be at some of these events, right?
Plus the caddies, plus everybody else, we're talking about 750 to 1,000 people.
Yep.
So I don't think you compare a footprint of 40 people to a footprint of 1,000 and take anything away from that feeling better. Now, there was nothing that happened that made you feel worse or to add to your apprehension, but no, now Colonial, now we go up to a much bigger footprint and a much a whole different scale. And so it was great to see the players. And I think the players know, again, like I said earlier, once they get inside the ropes, they're going to be fine. They think they're going to be fine. There's social distancing. They'll be fine. They've been social distancing now for the last 2 months for those who've been able to play golf on a regular basis for 3 months, going on 3 months now. They've been already practicing that. Hardly anybody's touched a flag stick in I don't know how long. So, again, once they get inside the ropes, I think they'll be fine. The juices will kick in. The competitive fire will take over. And it's just, it's going to be a little different getting inside those ropes and then getting outside of those ropes. So I don't think the two televised matches swayed anybody's thought either way.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports, featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine. And
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter.
Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
I can't speak about numbers in Fort Worth and how things are trending in the Dallas-Fort Worth and in Texas. I can tell you here in Connecticut, home of TPC River Highlands, which is going to be the third PGA Tour event site, if things go well. The trend here is in a good direction. I've got an app here that is put out by the state, and according to the app, yesterday we had just about 405 people total. there were new reported cases, and the trend line is lowering. Now, we've also had nearly 41,000 people in Little Connecticut test positive. It's been something that, like everywhere else, has done, you know, an unbelievable amount of damage and caused, you know, an unbelievable amount of grief. We are getting better. Things are loosening up here. I think that by and large, people are being pretty smart in this area. We're very close to New York, so people are very cognizant of social distancing, but people are also really eager to get on to their lives. Whatever normal is going to be, they want that. And I agree with you. I think you and I see a lot of eye to eye on this, that we're not going to be where we were a year ago anytime soon. Short of a vaccine, I don't see how, certainly Major League Baseball this summer, I don't even think aspires to have fans if they get a season going. I don't know how college football or the NFL puts 50, 60, 70,000 people, 100,000 people up in Ann Arbor, Michigan are going to show up and pack those stadiums. I don't think those things are going to happen. I don't know that we're going to have significant crowds at all at golf tournaments this year. You know, I think that we're going to have competition. But I'm bringing this up because I think that the numbers are getting better. I think as hopefully the PGA Tour is able to keep the players as safe as can be. Hopefully the guys feel good enough about it, but I'm not going to hold one iota of grief or frustration with any athlete or caddy or member of the media or whoever who says, I'm not ready to go to a sporting event, either whether they compete, whether they work on the edge of these things, whether they go like us to cover it. Everyone's going to have to take their own time getting to wherever they're going to be with this and just dealing with the fact that we're going to have to, at some point, most of us start going back out of our houses and doing things a little bit more and taking baby steps towards whatever opening up your bubble is going to be. We had some people over to our house, keeping everybody at a safe distance for a barbecue last night. It was family. It was 10 people, and people sat away from each other in the backyard outside. And it was a safe thing to do. But that's more than we've done, Steve, in the last 3 months, you know? And so I'll get off my little soapbox here and just tell you that I'm really hopeful that they're able to play. I'm hoping that the PGA Tour can execute the plan that they've laid out, because I think it's as well thought out as I could have ever hoped it to be. But if I'm a player and I just don't feel that the time is right, that's fine. I'm cool with that. I think that each one of these guys has to look in the mirror and just be like, this is when I'm ready to go, then I'm going to do this. And that'll be that. International players have it in a little bit differently. There's a story up on golfweek.com this morning about how international athletes are going to be able to enter the United States a little bit more easily. The acting Secretary of Homeland Security, Chad Wolf, said last Friday, and basically that they'd signed an order that permits certain foreign professional athletes who compete in sporting events, along with their essential staff and dependents, to enter the U.S. Travel restrictions have been a big problem with all this stuff. Basically, he came out and said that professional sporting events provide much needed economic benefits. Both equally important, they provide a community pride and national unity. In today's environment, Americans need their sports. It's time to reopen the economy, and it's time that we get our professional athletes back to work. And both the PGA Tour and the LPGA Tour were among the 8 sport leagues whose athletes are now eligible for this travel exemption. Before you and I started recording this podcast, we noted that it doesn't necessarily mean that people aren't going to be needing to quarantine in the U.S. What, if anything, and this is, you know, all sort of coming quickly at this point, do you anticipate that we're going to see players like Adam Scott, who's currently in Australia, Tommy Fleetwood, who's in the UK, you know, we've got Francesco Molinari in Italy. Do you think those guys come back, or do you just think that they're going to probably take a look at 2020 and be like, nope, I'll see you in 21. We're not even going to see those guys.
No, I think they're going to sit back and see how the first few weeks go, if they go. Evaluate from there, and then you get this huge run, if there's no interruption, a huge run that would include 3 major championships, would include a WGC, would include the FedEx Cup playoffs. So right now, as Lee Westwood put it, and again, Lee Westwood's only played in the United States six times since the start of 2018. So he hasn't played a whole lot. But Tommy Fleetwood has also alluded to the same thing. If they had to self-quarantine when they got to the United States, that's 14 days. If they had to self-quarantine when they get back to their home country, that's another 14 days.
Another 14 days.
So that's 28 days to come into the United States to play two tournaments? No. What they would do if they had to do 28 days of quarantining, they would come in if they were going to play 7 weeks in a 10-week period. So I think they're just going to sit back and see how this goes. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example. You know, Rory McIlroy, world number one Rory McIlroy, is going to have his good friend, his best friend, and his bag man, his caddy, Harry Diamond, is flying into the United States. And he's going to self-quarantine at Rory's guest house down in South Florida. I can tell you that while these travel restrictions were lifted by the federal government, there are travel restrictions still put in place here in the state of Florida, where if you fly in from Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, you have to self-quarantine for 14 days in Florida. That's still the case here. That wasn't lifted. There are still states that have their own self-quarantining restrictions. Those haven't been lifted. So, as I point out, Harry Diamond is going to self-quarantine in Rory McIlroy's guest house in South Florida. And it's because Rory is intent on playing the first three. His plan is to play the first three events, Colonial at Hilton Head, and then up in your neck of the woods at the Travelers. And then I know he would love to play the Memorial, which would be 3 weeks after that. And after the Memorial is the WGC event, so he'd like to play that. So it wouldn't be like Harry flying in, self-quarantined for 14 days. Rory's going to play a couple tournaments. Harry flies back, quarantines again for 14 days. It's not like that. There's a long stretch that Rory wants to play if the PGA Tour goes off uninterrupted. So as far as the other players, I think they're going to wait because there is that long stretch of, first of all, to see how things go. To see what are the positive test results? What happened if a player did test positive? What happened if a caddy did? What happened if a PGA Tour staff member did? What was the what happened after that? So I think they'll sit back because and it'll be tough for them. They're itching to go out and play, but there's a long stretch of great golf coming up, and so I think they're just going to wait for a long stretch where they could play 6 of 9 weeks or 7 of 10 weeks or 8 of 12 weeks. And so I don't expect to see Tommy Fleetwood come in the United States until maybe July.
It sounds like late July, like come in mid July to play late July kind of a deal.
Yeah.
If he sees it's starting to look good. Yeah. If it's looking good. Let's finish off talking about where we might be going with the match. I was tickled. It's funny. I talked to a good buddy of mine who's out in Colorado, and I don't know what he was maybe expecting about it, but he was like, oh, you know, it was good. The banter was great, but the golf wasn't very good. I'm like, yeah, because Phil and Tiger are legendary, and pride is a powerful thing. I'm sure Peyton Manning and Tom Brady were feeling probably more nervous than they felt in a long time. It's a miracle that in some cases Brady even made contact looking at his swing. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was great. I thought Barkley was great. I thought JT, was really good. One of the best exchanges I've seen on any golf broadcast ever, when Phil Mickelson, I think it was either on 6 or 7, was explaining that chip shot. The ball is wet. The ground is kind of skidding. I'm going to hit it into the grain here. That's going to knock off some of the speed that I would otherwise have. And then it's going to release to the hole. And then, being the great, short game guy he is, he pulls it off, executes exactly what he had just described to us within a foot. That was one of the best exchanges. I thought Justin Thomas was great. I loved the whole thing. If you're keeping score at home, and I know you are, Mickelson wins the first one. Now Tiger teaming up with Peyton Manning wins the second one. If we get the match three, there have been some names that have already been floated around that people would love to see. The names with Tiger and Phil being Steph Curry, who loves himself some golf and has played some events, Tony Romo, John Smoltz, and Michael Jordan. I'll put this one to you. Who do you think would be the best of those four in terms of getting things going and would be the most entertaining? But then part two, who do you think they could actually get to come on and compete in a match three?
Well, the first name in right now of those four is Jordan, Michael Jordan. He's retired. So it, depending on when they would play match three, if they would play it in December or if they would play it in November, that goes up against the PGA Tour. So I would say it'd have to go probably December at the earliest. And they could be playing basketball then. They could be playing baseball then. So Steph Curry would be out. John Smoltz would be out. Tony Romo would be out. So that you have to take into consideration. But match three, I mean, you start with the biggest name, that's Michael Jordan, and he's a player. We also know that Peyton Manning and Tom Brady were players, and then you put them in front of those cameras and you put them alongside Tiger and Phil, and, yep. You know, stuff happens. But I would go MJ to begin with. And after that, it depends on who's available. I don't know if there's a big enough name in entertainment that's a good enough player. I know back in his day, Jack Nicholson would have been great.
I know that Justin Timberlake has played a bunch. He's played the Pebble Beach event. Obviously, yeah. Now we're coming from entertainment, but I don't know how good a stick he is.
He's good. I mean, we watched him 1 year at Pebble Beach. He chipped in on 16. He almost aced 7 that day. He came like an inch away. He chipped in on 16. He made another birdie, I think, or chipped in again on 17. That was all in the same round at Pebble. He can play. And he's played a lot of golf with Justin Rose down at Albany in the Bahamas. Mark Wahlberg can play. I don't know if he's
just thinking of him. Wahlberg plays a lot in L.A.
I don't know if he's on the same level as Justin. I do not know. But they might have to go to the entertainment world because – the conflicts of the other professional athletes and the other, like point. Smoltz would be announcing and Romo would be announcing. But you start with Jordan. Well, first of all, you got to get Phil and Tiger on board. You get them on board, and then you go to Michael Jordan. Hey, Michael,
if you were somebody and you were putting together something and somehow you got Jordan on board first, is there any way that the Tiger and Phil don't say yes? If like you're like, hey, look, we've already talked to Jordan's people. Michael's on board with this. He said, I'm retired. I would love to do this. Let's you know, I'll put up whatever for charity myself. I'll get Nike to pony up some charity, some other companies. I'm like, we can handle that. Michael's in. Are you guys in? There's no way they say no to that, is there?
No. And of course, Phil's not going to say no to anything. And something just popped in my mind, you know, how about Team Nike against Team Callaway? You got Michael Jordan and Tiger Woods against Phil Mickelson and Annika Sorenstam.
There you go.
Now that would be, that could be something. And I'm not going out on a limb here. Annika's still better than Michael Jordan.
Oh, but, she could play in her sleep and take Jordan.
So maybe you look at that angle, or, you know, you call Lexi Thompson, and you go from that angle. And I know I've seen, let's go all four professionals, JT and Tiger, you know, Justin Thomas and Tiger against Phil Mickelson and Ricky Fowler, or Phil Mickelson and Jordan Spieth. If they go that way, we would rob ourselves of one of the best on-course analysts we've ever seen in Justin Thomas. So if we have a match three, I think match two ran into too many voices. They tried to get too many people involved when it was just basically the four guys and Justin Thomas out there and Barkley weighing in, and Trevor Immelman was outstanding.
Yes, he was.
And so I wouldn't add voices, but I would certainly do everything in my power to get Justin Thomas Thomas back out there because he was brilliant.
Well, what we learned is clearly they learned from the shortcomings of the first match that there wasn't just enough banter back and forth between Phil and Tiger. That during the broadcast, you had DraftKings odds on who's going to win the hole and all kinds of different things are going on. So they played up the gambling and the fantasy angles more. And by having, you know, you can balance it out with, you needed more voices, having the players mic'd, having the players be able to hear what the commentators are saying. Brilliant. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that was all great. It was really, really, it bummed us out. I think everybody out that the weather did not cooperate. If we could have had a little bit better weather so that the rain really wasn't a factor, the course plays a little bit better. But even with the limited number of cameras and stuff, they clearly looked at what didn't happen in the first one that we needed. Last week at the TaylorMade Driving Relief, what did we see that maybe was lacking that we can sprinkle in a little bit more of and then go on? There's room for improvement, but the improvement that was already made was oceans. It was oceans better than what we had had before. And to me, Steve, it just reinforced the idea that golf as a format for entertainment for people is fantastic. It just, there's enough time between shots. There's enough tension that gets built up. There's the theater of the match itself. And everybody reacts differently. Four Hall of Fame athletes hanging out, and everybody is playing different roles. Phil gets to be the showman and chatty and to play that role. Tiger is just pounding one fairway after another and is there. Peyton Manning exceeded my expectations a little bit. I mean, that par three, he gets some really nice shots, hit some loose ones, hit some good ones. And then Brady, you know, who couldn't find the earth, and then all of a sudden he pitches in from wherever that was and gives it to Barkley. It's like there was a player that all of us could identify with. Everybody, and it was great. There was enough time, there was some humor, there was some learning. It was one of the better things, and I'm hoping that we get match three. I'm hoping the PGA Tour and the other golfers are out there. It's like, hey, we're starting to get close to a formula that can be successful that we could put wherever. You know, forget these wonderful World of Golf matches. Let's mix and use golf as the medium for these entertainment products, whatever you want to call it. I think people tune in. They certainly tune in now because we have no sports. But I think later on when sports starts to make a comeback, people will still tune in.
Well, if they just don't do too many of them. And yet you can have too much of a good thing.
Yes, you can.
So at most one a year.
I just don't want it to go away, I guess is what I'm saying, is that once we sort of get to the other side of and wherever we're going to be, that we've clearly stumbled on something that you can create if you did one or two of these things a year. So to your point, keep it special. Make sure that the mix of people was right, that the venue was right, and have the money go to a good cause, because nobody wants to see millionaires playing for millions and keeping all the millions. And in this environment, that's not going to happen. I'm no doubt of that. But it was great. It had people who had nothing to do with golf enjoying it. And I think if you get the right mix, we can do it. You going to peg it up this week? You going to get there and play, or are you going to be working for a living this week?
Well, I'm working for a living. Right now it's supposed to rain all week, so I don't know.
No, that makes it easier. That'll make it easier. Listen, Steve, I appreciate you coming on the Forward Press once again. Thanks a lot, buddy.
You betcha, big man. Anytime.